Denise, I think you're going to present this one.
Well, yeah, very briefly. I'm sorry for distributing this last-minute document, and it's a little bit lengthy, but we wanted to make you aware of all these communications that we have been receiving from ESMA. Very briefly, if you recall, well, the board received a request to make some improvements to IFRS 8 with regards to the application of the aggregation criteria and the identification of the chief operating decision maker. And so we discussed these issues at the July 2011 meeting, and the committee decided that rather than attempt to address these issues through an interpretation or through an annual improvement, it would be best to recommend that the board should consider this issue as part of a future post-implementation review of IFRS 8. Well, the submitter read our, well, the committee's decision as we published it in the IFRIC update, and they expressed their disagreement with it, and they are encouraging the committee to consider the issues raised as part of a, well, to issue them before a post-implementation review of IFRS 8 occurs, because they believe that it would be beneficial, and also because they are unclear on when this post-implementation review of IFRS 8 is going to take place. So basically, in this second submission that we received from the same submitter, they are encouraging the committee to consider recommending the board to include a specific requirement in IFRS 8 regarding the basis for aggregating operating segments in paragraph 22, and also to reconsider the definition of the code EM. So look at some amendments in paragraphs 1, 7, which contain definitions of the code EM.
Okay, I think the other thing just to mention is that obviously we have prepared a board paper for the RSB board meeting in a couple of weeks' time, which summarises the issue and also the committee's discussion from July, and we'll be presenting that to the board in 2 weeks' time, sort of reporting back to them on your discussion. But what we wanted to be able to do today was to give you the opportunity to consider the comment letter that had been received from submitter and any sort of additional thoughts or comments that you had in the light of that that you wanted to provide to us to feed back to the board as part of that discussion with the board in 2 weeks' time. And obviously we'd like to do that. So really just hand it over to you to see whether there are specific questions or comments that you've got on the issue in the light of the comment letter received.
Scott?
I wonder if Patrick may have some more flavor or color to give us on the comments. I think when we discussed this last time, we had a feeling that this might have come from a regulator, and I think during the discussion it became clear that it was from a regulator. I'd like to hear more. I don't think it does us a lot of good in terms of the environment for IFRS to, kind of have the regulators saying we need help and the board and IFRIC saying we're not going to give it to you. We're kind of on the same side, and it'd be nice if we could find a way to assist. That being said, I think we got to the right place last time, but now knowing that it's definitely from ESMA and having ESMA on the record that they, even after reading the agenda decision and being in the meeting, they don't think we got to the right place. I guess I'd like to hear more, Patrick, if you're willing to give us a little more.
Did you work?
That's the wrong one.
Okay. Well,
Yes, we hope that we could send another letter because we felt at the end of last time's discussion that the things that we have observed as regulators had not been fully considered or that we had not made our points clear enough for them to be considered by the committee. If I look at the first question, which is the aggregation criteria, the important thing that I would like to say is when you look at the core principle in IFRS 8, because segment information should help investors understand better the activities of a company or a group, I think I can say that our expectations were that investors would have more information, more details about the various segments in an entity. And this is not the case. In the best case, well, I think overall I can say that there's no more segments with IFRS 8 than there were with IS 14, no more, no less. So no change, no big change. However, we sometimes observe, and this is not just in my jurisdiction, this is not just in one other European jurisdiction, this is something that we observe in many countries in Europe, that companies are presenting segments that are so broad that there certainly is some kind of aggregation that is done in order to present those segments. And rarely disclosures about this, the aggregation that is performed is sufficient for readers to understand what kind of aggregation has been made, on what grounds. So the first thing is there is a lack of information provided to investors on this particular issue. And when we ask additional information on a case-by-case basis to issuers to try and understand the reasons for which segments have been aggregated, we are sometimes faced with surprising answers that let us fear that the aggregation criteria that are included in IFRS 8 are not understood or are understood in a way that we feel might not be in line with what the ISB wanted in the first place. If you look at paragraph 12, I shouldn't say many, but in some cases we have received answers saying that the segments had similar economic characteristics, but because the second sentence of this paragraph starts with, for example, there is some diversity in the way these economic characteristics are analyzed. I've heard explanations such as the long-term growth rate for revenue are similar. Okay, is that sufficient? My feeling it's not sufficient. But we have difficulties with that because of the way paragraph 12 is written and because of the lack of information, at least that's our assessment in the notes to the financial statements. And it's not just a matter of providing information to regulators in order for them to enforce IFRS. I think more broadly it's a problem because information provided to investors is not detailed enough to help them understand the kind of aggregation that is performed and the judgment that is behind this process of aggregating segments.
Let's let Bert come in.
Well, it does not happen very often that the regulator comes to us with a specific question, insists after we reject it or said something about it, insists that we start doing it again or dealing with it again. So there must be something important behind it, obviously, as Patrick said. So and I'm in the same opinion as Scott. We are kind of on the same side, that we want to try to facilitate consistent application of IFRS worldwide. So why shouldn't we help the regulator generally if he really needs help? On the other hand, I think a regulator, if the standard is clear and we came to the conclusion that the standard is quite clear on this point, should have the means to enforce these regulations and to ask companies that are not giving sufficient disclosure to give more disclosure. So why that is not the case here, I cannot say, but if it is not able for a regulator to ask a company where the regulator thinks that the disclosure is not sufficient to give more disclosure to the investors, then maybe we can help them. But I would like to have more information about why you can do that as an enforcer yourself.
If you look at paragraph 12, there's obviously a twist in the way issuers are reading this paragraph, because they stop at the second sentence saying, well, this is just an example that is given, and they avoid to look at the following part of this paragraph that says that segments should have similar characteristics in the nature of the products and services, in the nature of the production processes, the type of customers, etc., etc. And when we point out this fact, the fact that they are overlooking those criteria that are set by the standard, they almost always answer that this is just the way their management is looking at those segments, looking at the long-term growth rate in revenue, for instance, or whatever the criterion that they tell us is the one they are looking at. And because IFRS 8 puts the emphasis on the way management is looking at things, it's very difficult for us to to prove that this cannot be the way. You have to get the reports that is provided to the CODM, but the reports are prepared in a way that will confirm that this is what they're looking at, or what they will provide is a report in two parts. One is an executive summary that will be in line with their explanation, and the second part will be much more detailed, and their explanation will be, well, the CODM is only looking at the first part. Well, and therefore, we think that this should be put to the knowledge of investors. This should be disclosed, if this is really the way they look at their business. This should be disclosed.
Let's go Guido, Ruth, Joanna.
This really seems to be an issue. From what I've heard from Patrick, with regards to the reporting segments, it seems that especially the second sentence in paragraph 12 is a problem, because people are only looking at it, take it as an example, and then draw their conclusion just from this sentence. But if you read on in paragraph 12, there is another sentence in there that you only have similar economic characteristics if each of the following is met, and then we have a long list. So Patrick, would it help you? Because I don't think it's the best way to say, well, there's a problem in the standard, or might be a problem because the wording is misleading, and I'm trying to fit this problem with notes disclosures. Wouldn't it be better just to take the second sentence out there, leave the rest in there, so that people cannot go to the second sentence and say that this is an example, I'm applying just this sentence and not all the other aspects that are required to put operating segments together? Because I see your point, but the question that I'm asking myself is the right way to do it, to say there is a problem in the standard because people are misunderstanding paragraph 12, and I'm going to fix it by forcing them to disclose what they have done. Isn't it better to fix paragraph 12?
It would certainly help. I do agree with that. But I also think that it would still be useful to understand what kind of aggregation has been performed. And if you consider large companies with a lot of activities, I really think that it is useful to understand the way they have organized their segment reporting. And I think the standard could also be improved in this area.
So you are not looking at this notes disclosure as a avoiding misuse, but as additional information that is used.
Okay, I've forgotten my sequence, but Ruth, I think you were next up.
I wanted to ask Patrick whether the same question as Guido. I think perhaps paragraph 12 is the problem, and maybe it needs to be reordered to list the A, B, the A to E in the paragraph. But what I wanted to ask you was, do you think that management is reporting more information internally than they are externally? So in other words, that they are not being consistent in their external reporting with their internal reporting deliberately in order to not reveal the segmentation. Is that what's behind the concern?
Well, it's not just me, I think. I can say that European enforcers overall have a very strong feeling that entities are, and management is not using only the information that is provided to us and that is presented to investors. In too many cases, to remain silent in this committee.
So would something, so would an amendment or an improvement or whatever to IFRSA that says something along the lines of that the management should not report anything less externally than what the CODM, as appropriately defined, and I know that's your second point, is receiving internally, would that help? I mean, I think that's clear that IFRS 8 requires that, but if people aren't applying it that way, would something along those lines help to address the concern?
It might help. I'm not sure that we will be able in all cases to avoid abuses in this area. And that's the reason why we thought that transparency was another approach to the problem. Maybe something that is adding to an improvement to the wording in paragraph 12. And would help all readers of the financial statements understand better what has been done. And when we discuss this thing with analysts, they, on a consistent basis, tell us that this is an information that is key to them and for which they feel that entities are not providing an information that is consistent with what the management really uses.
Joanna?
I'm going to be slightly provocative in what I say. Surprise, surprise. I understand that we don't very often get letters from regulators and therefore we need to think about this. But I honestly believe that from an interpretations committee perspective, we got the answer right last time. And thinking about it and thinking about why has ESMA written to us again and the concern from the regulators, and this is the provocative bit, I am perturbed that that has happened. And what strikes me is because this standard doesn't have rules in it, it actually says do what management does. And therefore, management are using judgments as to what they do internally and putting those things into their external financial statements. And from a regulator's perspective, that makes it very, very hard to regulate because somebody says, this is what I do internally, and the regulator does not have a rule that says, sorry, I can't accept that because the rule says this, because it is a judgment that is being used. And I guess I sort of have a question for Patrick in terms of, is that, I mean, the transparency that is wanted is, and listening to Patrick is all around, well, we're not getting the answers that we think we should have because we are used to and we're regulators, and I can say this, I was a regulator, that you want rules to be able to measure something against. So I don't know where I'm actually heading with the answer to this, but I think that it is something that we need to bear in mind in reaching a conclusion here. If it is around that this standard says basically do what management does and that is the issue, then I don't believe that it is even more that it is right that we should do anything. We absolutely should be sending it back to the ISB and saying, look at it in conjunction with post-implementation, because if what management does, report what management does, is not the right answer for analysts or anybody else, then that is where it needs to be addressed, not in tweaking and making something transparent so that the regulator can say, well, I don't like the fact that this is your judgment. As I said, slightly provocative, and I don't know quite where that leads us, but I was trying to understand why we've sort of got this.
Joanna, that's absolutely true. We're not... There is no rule. IFRS 8 proposes principles. The thing is, to put this to apply those principles, you have to an entity, an issuer, has to use its judgment. In other areas, judgment is used, but you have requirements, especially in IS1, when significant judgment is used. The thing is, there is a gap between what managers, what issuers think of reporting segments, or reportable segments, and they probably don't think that the judgment used in this area is significant enough for them to communicate on this, whereas when you talk to analysts, it's obviously something that is very significant. And I'm sorry to say, it's not just in order to make enforcers happy. We're conveying a comment that is also shared by many analysts we've spoken with.
Thank you. Patrick, we are aware, at least I am aware, that there is a certain degree of dissatisfaction by certain analysts with IFRS 8 as it is. We will undertake a review as part of the post-implementation review. Do you think the matter from ESMA's perspective is so urgent that it requires a short-term amendment, or is it more a fundamental consideration of all the comments that we will receive as part of the post-implementation review that could better take care of whatever dissatisfaction there is with IFRS 8?
We are, of course, aware of the post-implementation review that will be performed on IFRS 8. What we thought was that on this matter, as well as on the other one, it would have been quite easy to improve significantly the disclosures provided to investors, with a limited amendment to IFRS 8. And therefore that maybe the ISB would agree to those two small changes.
I don't want to cut off discussion. Let's get Guido and then Scott, and then let's do a wrap-up.
Well, I think the two issues that we are looking at, the one with the aggregation criteria, I think it's not an issue about how do they internally report, because that's the operating segment issue. That's paragraph 5. So what is provided to the CODM, that is an operating segment, and then you go to 12 and you may then aggregate operating segments. So it's still an issue, though. I've also spoken to a lot of analysts, and they agree that IFRS 8, there's some room for improvement. But the one thing, you know, looking at these figures through the eyes of management, that's not aggregation criteria, and maybe without, you know, overhauling the whole IFRS 8 view, you could still look at paragraph 12 and maybe do something there as a quick fix to at least address this issue. The other one is a more complex issue that addresses the whole, you know, model that IFRS 8 is built on. So maybe, I don't know whether that would help, but I would go this way and ask the board to do something on at least on paragraph 12 before they go to the post-implementation review. Because that's about aggregating operating segments. It's not about how it's reported within the company. That's another issue.
Luca has been in for a while, so I'm going to ask him and then Scott real quickly.
More or less the same concern of Guido. I think that the issue is relevant, and but we should pay a lot of attention on what we are looking, because there are very different ideas in the way in which you can solve this kind of solution. I will stay on the elements of the aggregation, because I'm quite convinced that the information that an analyst would like to have will be absolutely more relevant than those that are presented in IFRS 8. One other aspect is that, in general, in the board of directors, there are very kind of different results that are presented, reported, adjusted, other kinds of performance analysis and whatever. So the item could be absolutely broader, and so we have to focus on which is the aspect that we have to solve. And I think that if we want to do something, we have to stay on paragraph 12, because otherwise the problem will be the entire principle, not only this part of the aggregation.
Scott?
Like Joanna, I guess I was also a regulator, and I actually got to enforce this standard for a while, since we had it in the U.S. for some time in almost this exact form. You probably know this, Patrick, but these problems are exactly the same as what the U.S. went through when FAS 131 was first implemented. It seems like this segment reporting standard, you know, becomes a difficult thing to enforce, although I wonder if, rather than mandating additional disclosure, we could, as Guido suggested, do something that might help the enforcement. For example, I heard three things in the discussions at the two meetings that I kind of think are just wrong, and that we don't need changes to the standard to clarify. You know, number one, that some are saying the CODM is the entire board of directors, which includes outside directors, and, you know, therefore, when you look at the information provided to the outside directors, that's not very much, and so you don't get a lot of detail. Well, I would have thought it'd be pretty clear that your CODM is not a group that includes outsiders. Number two, what you said earlier, that some companies are suggesting that, you know, there's two sets of information that goes to the CODM, but they only use one. You know, it's been, I think, the general practice in the U.S., to say, yeah, we don't really believe that your CEO gets a bunch of information he doesn't use. You know, those people are pretty busy, and, you know, we're not buying that he only looks at the top three pages of the 30-page report. If he gets a 30-page report, it's because he wants a 30-page report. And then the third thing was that some are suggesting that in aggregation, you can just stop at similar economic characteristics and not worry about the five things in A through E. And, you know, I think gradually over time it became clear in the U.S. that, no, you have to consider A through E as well. There is a lot of debate about what it means to have similar economic characteristics, and given the standard, I don't think we can help much to resolve that. But I think we can say you have to have similar economic characteristics and A through E, because that's what the standard says. It seems like those three pieces, if we could give you something that would help you enforce those pieces the way I think they were intended, that might resolve a lot of the problems. Am I correct in that regard? So is there something short of a full interpretation or an amendment to the standard that would help you? So I thought in the agenda decision we tried to help at least with the outside director piece of it. Mm-hmm. And I think your letter suggests to me that you don't think that's going to give you what you need on that.
Let me make a suggestion. I'm not sure that's a fair question to Patrick, because it has to do with inside baseball in this building.
Okay.
The most dysfunctional thing that I can envision happening is this going to the board and then the board kicking it back to the committee.
Well, it'd be clear that we have to do something then.
Point one. Point two, there's nothing we can do about this meeting because we don't have the materials or the time or anything else. So even if it was something the committee was going to do, we'd have to do it in November, by which time the board will have talked to it and had the opportunity to kick it back to us. But may I take Scott's three points as a working outline for whoever does this? That those are the three issues, and now it's just a question of whether the board wants to take them on or whether they want to bounce it back to the committee. Patrick, is that?
Yeah.
Well, yes. I wonder also if it's something that the regulators can, you know, with some moral support of IFRIC or the board, can go after harder. I mean, my experience in the U.S. is that the SEC had to stress those points, and the FASB, I think, you know, kind of encouraged it, but nobody actually amended the standard.
Point taken. I'm not sure where moral support stands and the effectiveness.
I'm not sure I used the right words either.
Given the time, I don't want to beat this one an awful lot. So if we could cut it off, Florence, was that okay? Okay. Denise, real quickly, what do you anticipate taking to the board? or is that an unfair question?
Yeah, probably yes, because, I think there are many other questions on IFRS 8, and they would prefer, as Philippe said, to just take it to a broader project on IFRS 8.
But we are going to talk about it in September at the board meeting.
Sounds yeah, of course we're going to. I will not be there on the discussion, but they will. We're going to talk about it.
And now she's even happier that she won't be.
Okay, well, we'll take it on that basis, Patrick. This isn't over. As I say, we'll take it unless I see any objections to the basic outline that's got to give Andrew, and then I have to let Lawrence back in.
It wasn't an objection. It was just clarification around what the three things. We've got non-executive directors.
So it wasn't an objection. It was just clarification of the three issues that I got down here. Non-executive directors, similar characteristics plus A through E. What was the third one?
It's about the two sets of information, but only looking at one of them.
Okay. And did I hear that we're trying to do that without amending anything, but just offering moral support, as it were?
Well, that's yet to be determined. I don't know that we have a determination yet on that. We probably do need the board's guidance on that. Okay. Laurent, now you get to come back in.
That's tying in to what has just been said about the form we would want to use, and I was wondering
whether through the IFRIC update and completing our previous agenda decision to put more focus on particularly these A to E of paragraph 12, highlight that it starts with different sentences. So I would have expected that these sentences would have applied as a requirement, not just as an illustration that you would not apply. So as a quick fix, if we wanted to have a quick fix, do we want to use IFRIC update through an agenda rejection going into that direction?
Philippe? If I was still a regulator, I would say thank you guys for your moral support, but please make it public. Please say it in public.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, yes, I agree with you, Philippe, but I wanted to make a comment on the identification of the CODM. Because of the way IFRS 8 is written, a public support through an agenda decision to reject an issue will not be sufficient.
That's what I was afraid of. Okay, well, we will be discussing this with the board in September.
We will, yes.
And before this committee meets again, we'll know what the outcome of that was. Mm-hmm. We'll certainly make sure that the board is apprised of your concerns. And as I proposed, we'll structure it around those three issues. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's then move on. Thomas, if you'd come back to the table. The staff has identified in these two issues and in two of the tax issues that you'll be discussing tomorrow,